Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, July 29th, 2021. It is the 210th day of the year. And as always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that webpage and click on the link that says Start Here in the upper left-hand corner, it will show you a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to some great advantage for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships. And you can also download the actual tool itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click it and download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also get access to a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have either been working through the worksheet process live on the show, or they've given testimonials about how effective and positively it's affected their lives by using these tools. Or we're talking about some of the dynamics behind how something so simple can be so effective. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and get access to a completely free and private app. And that app contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often, because that tends to spark comments, questions, answers. And if you have any of those, you can give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1. And that will put a question on by your phone number, and I'll announce it by your area code, and we can have a conversation. You can also email Jeannie at J-E-A-N-I-E at whyagain.org, whyagain.org. Or you can email me directly at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And we will do our best to talk about your comments or your questions on the air, and then you can get access to them through the archives. The archives of the show are available for the past 10 years plus at whyagain.org, and just click on the picture of the microphone. And then you can scroll down to the year and pick the month and the day and get access to any of the shows we've done over the past 10 plus years. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year, and it's the 210th day of the year, which means today's lesson is continuing the review. And we're reminded that I am not a body, I am free, for I am still as the Creator created me. And then today is a review of lesson 190, which says, I choose the joy of creation instead of pain. My pain is my idea. It is not the idea of a creator, but one I thought apart from creation and from its will. Its will is joy and only joy for its beloved offspring. And that I choose. I choose joy instead of what I made, which is the pain, the fear, the sadness, the hurt, the negative emotional states. So fairly simple lesson, fairly simple review. I choose the joy of the Creator instead of pain. Pam Grout, in her book, The Course in Miracles Experiment, Lesson 210, is titled, I Know You're Not, parentheses, a body, but what am I? And she quotes Veronica Tugaleva as saying, we speak about losing our minds as if it's a bad thing. I say, lose your mind. Do it purposefully. Find out who you really are beyond your thoughts and beliefs. Lose your mind. Find your soul. Pam writes, the Tarahumara Indians in Copper Canyon, Mexico, run 100 miles a day without struggling, without training, without doing all the necessary drills encrusted in old beliefs. They defy every known rule of physical limitation because no one ever told them they can't. Running to the Tarahumara is a joyful, sacred experience. And every Tarahumara knows the older you get, the faster you run. And like the Course says, they find confirmation for their beliefs. In 1993, a half dozen Tarahumara were brought to the Leadville Ultra, a grueling high-altitude marathon over the scrabbly trails and snowy peaks of the Colorado Rockies. It was apparent from the starting line that the toga-wearing runners were nothing like the other runners. The other runners were nervously monitoring their pulses, somberly preparing for what they long believed to be a, quote, near impossible feat, close quote. The middle-aged Tarahumara were laughing, shooting the breeze, smoking butts, and wondering if they should abandon the sandals they made from rubber tires in exchange for the Rockport cross trainers that were offered by their sponsors. 20 hours later, they stunned the running world when 55-year-old Victoriano Churro came in first, followed by his Tarahumara buddies, Chirildo Chacarito in second and Manuel Luna in fifth. Physiologist David Groom ran cardiovascular tests on the Tarahumara runners and discovered that their blood pressure went down when they were running. As this review promises, they escaped the bondage of the world. This review in Course in Miracles workbook lessons is telling us that we can escape the bondage of the physical world, that what we expect, we experience, that we are co-creators, that we are the creators of our life experience. So that's our Course in Miracles lesson for today and our Course in Miracles experiment commentary from Pam Grout. And we have 50 minutes left, or almost 50 minutes left, to take your comments, questions, answers, 563-999-3581. Today is, it's a Thursday, if I'm correct. And that means we've got another Mindshifter support group tonight from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. And we would appreciate it if you would join us or pass this information along to somebody that you think might benefit from joining us. The information on how to join that meeting, absolutely free, is available at mindshiftersacademy.org. And there's a separate login page for Tuesdays versus Thursdays. And you never know what we'll get into. We might listen to a lecture. We might just do worksheets. Tuesday, most of the session was spent with me doing a worksheet and then discussing it, and other people discussing their issues triggered from that worksheet. So let us know how we can support you. What would be a topic you would like us to explore today? 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. What's on your mind? I am preparing for later today where I will do an interview with Robert Whitaker, who is the author of 2 powerhouse books on mental health issues. One of them is titled Anatomy of an Epidemic, trying to figure out how our mental health disability claims to our government are going up year after year, and how that makes sense if we have such powerful, effective medications from the psychiatry field and from the drug companies. Why are we seeing more and more people disabled through their mental health problems to the point of filing for disability? And the other book that he's written is Mad in America, which tracks the history of doctors trying to treat mental illness from the 1700s to the current time. And the message is, if you take medication, please try and take the least medication possible for the shortest period of time to achieve the desired results, and make sure that you understand that is not healing, that is just treating symptoms. And if the medications work well for you, hopefully they will give you enough energy and vitality so that you will be able to use tools like the ones Michael and Jeannie offer at whyagain.org, or you will be able to engage a therapist who is trauma-informed to help sort out how life events may have left you with the experience of trauma and the residual energies of trauma, the false negative beliefs that are often downloaded as a result of trauma, and work through that so that you can be moving towards healing in your life as opposed to simply treating the symptoms. Because to date, there is no treatment for the symptoms that are listed as mental health issues that do not create more problems. The medical treatments, there are none that don't create more problems than they fix over the long haul. And so hopefully within a few weeks, that interview with Robert Whitaker will be available at journeysdream.org/podcast. And that's developed into quite a nice little resource that I would recommend to people. If you know somebody who's struggling with mental health issues and they're not very satisfied with the allopathic medical or the current model of medical treatment for mental health, which is usually drugs, drugs, and more drugs, or simply talk therapy and drugs, direct them to the On Your Mind podcast hosted by Journey's Dream, because there are now over 60 interviews with people who've either survived their own mental health adventures and or who are practicing holistic, integrative, or functional medicine approaches to helping people through their mental health challenges. And there might be some perspectives and or resources in those interviews that would be of great value to the people that you know who are either having their own mental health issues or watching a friend or a family member struggle with a mental health issue. So 563-999-3581. You can call that number and press 1, and we'll have a conversation. I was pleased to read through the list of horrors in Robert Whittaker's book that there is some evidence about what does work, what does really help people have decidedly better long-term outcomes if they have a serious mental health issue. And the thing that works is treating people with respect, treating them with loving kindness, teaching them how to have, you know, gradually increasing more authority in their own life, and having minimal contact with the medications, which, as we just mentioned, have increasingly more negative effects the longer people are on them. And not too surprisingly, the Quakers, who had a very humanistic approach, had one of the more powerfully effective approaches, which was create a loving, clean, safe, respectful environment and engage people with listening and daily activities for personal hygiene and art and music and exercise. And over time, the majority of people, even with schizophrenia as a diagnosis, with psychosis and hallucinations, the majority of those people have far better outcomes than people who are treated with medications. So, again, you know, we read in books like The Course in Miracles that love is all there is and love is the answer, and but in real life, with serious difficulties, life experience actually demonstrates the truth of that. What's the best treatment for someone who is psychotic? It's not to be loaded up with medications that lock down their nervous system and cause pain and muscle spasms and mimic a bunch of other diseases. It's to be treated with respect and nurturance and support, and even the long-term follow-ups indicate a far better outcome. One of the chapters in the book, or one of the segments in the book, is titled I think it's Better in Nigeria is one of the chapter titles. And so a whole series of studies indicate that the developing countries who don't have as many medications and psych hospitals, and they have far better outcomes for people who experience a psychotic episode or would get the label of schizophrenia here in America. And it's mind-boggling if these medications that we give people are so effective, why are people in countries where they don't have those medications getting such better results? So if you know somebody who's struggling with mental health issues, there's a really nice resource developing. There's another really good one, which is samehereglobal.org, S-A-M-E-H-E-R-E global.org. And this is another website that's full of practitioners who have had their own issues and or have had family members who have issues. And so they've been motivated to look for approaches, healing dynamics, et cetera, that have better results and far fewer negative impacts. So samehereglobal.org and or journeysdream.org/podcast. So how can we support you today? What is on your mind? What would be a useful topic? We've had a whole series of things this week. I think I've gone back and looked at the list of worksheets that are available on whyagain.org. I've had several occasions this week in my therapy sessions to mention to people the tool of the worksheet that's available that's titled Three Early Memories of Conflict. And it's always interesting when I'm talking to somebody who's never been exposed to this kind of work before, and when I talk to them about how that particular tool, that worksheet itself, is designed to help me understand how my life as an adult has essentially been driven by patterns that I downloaded in my first 6, 7, or 8 years. It's mind-boggling, and some people, you know, think it's absolutely crazy. However, for those of us who've used a tool like that and have seen that with that tool combined with the reality management worksheet and or something like EFT tapping, they've seen the positive changes in their lives. It's no longer a fantasy. So that tool simply asks me to think about three of my earliest memories of conflict. One of the big traps with that tool is that people say, well, I don't remember much of my childhood. And we say, okay, so what's one of your earliest memories of conflict? And they say, I just told you I don't remember my childhood. And I say, okay, do you remember your 20s or your 30s? Do you remember something from last week or 2 years ago? Well, yeah, then use one of those. And when you get three of those memories of conflict, you write out the actual, you know, a thumbnail sketch of what was going on and how old you were on the form. And then you go back through the form, and for each one of those memories of conflict, you do the sentence completion. Life is, I am, I need, I feel, relationships are, people are, as though you were the age you were at the time of the conflict. So, you know, for instance, one of the ones that came up one of the first times I did that worksheet was I was about 9 years old, and I was, because I'd had a trauma where I'd fallen into the lake and had a physical wound and was crying and soaked wet, I was isolated from the rest of the kids, and I was a witness to an angry exchange between my mother and father and a neighbor who was not a very reputable character. And my mother was setting healthy boundaries, but she was doing it with anger. And my father was being, timid. And so I downloaded this energy, and that was one of the first, you know, memories of conflict that came up when I was doing this worksheet. And so I put that on the list, and then I filled it out, and I had a couple of others, another one maybe from high school, another one from, you know, in my 20s. And when I came back and started looking at the pattern, I was shocked to realize that the kinds of the ways I handle conflict as an adult are almost exactly the same as the way I handled it when I was 9 years old. I shut down, I withdrew, I would do anything to make other people happy. I was basically, in a way, mimicking what my father was doing, not what my mother was doing. And so as I continue to use that tool and realize that as a competent adult, I'm not really using my communication skills, my psychology training. I'm not using my resources very effectively. I'm basically responding like a scared, wounded 9-year-old most of the time when conflict arises. And let's say I was probably introduced to that tool 16 years ago and have been using it a number of times since then in support groups and then doing worksheets on some of the issues that come up. And I can say with complete confidence that the way I handle conflict and confrontation today is light years different than what it was before I found that tool. And so if there's something that you would like to change for the better about the way you handle conflict and confrontation, there's an absolutely free tool available at whyagain.org. It's called The Three Early Memories of Conflict. And after you click on the link in the homepage that says Start Here, just scroll down the list of worksheets that are there until you find that. Click, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. It's absolutely free. And if you're like most of us, it will be quite the eye-opener when you realize how so many of your adult interactions, and I say that with adult in quotes, how many of your adult interactions are really just replaying the trauma patterns that you downloaded as a child or a preteen. And again, if you're like most of us, there's a lot more potential for you to respond from a mature and a more flexible, a more productive response pattern as an adult than the way you responded when you were a traumatized child. However, you can't get access to those more mature coping skills and better sense of self if you're triggered to the trauma response, if you don't go in and dismantle the energies around the trauma response, whether they're beliefs or emotions or actual trauma energy in the physical system, then you will simply remain at the mercy of those automatic response patterns whenever they're triggered. So there's another way that the tools that are made available can help improve your life. And I highly recommend going to that Three Early Memories of Conflict worksheet and downloading it, reading it, filling it out, maybe even calling the internet show and getting Michael or Jeannie to help you step through it if it's not completely clear intuitively. Because my personal experience has been that was a life-changing tool. Or that I should say it this way, my use of that tool has helped me change my life. The tool by itself doesn't really do anything. But I have actively applied it. I have listened to that lecture probably 15 or 20 times in the support group over the years. And each time it comes up, almost every time it comes up, I redo the worksheet. And I get a little bit bigger, a little bit deeper, a little bit more nuanced appreciation for how early patterns in my life, when I was, you know, only had access to the primitive coping mechanisms of, you know, denial and rage and things like that, how those patterns were driving my interactions as an adult. And hopefully you can see the value in being able to get access to your more mature coping mechanisms and your life experience on an ongoing basis actively in life, rather than having your traumatized 9-year-old response patterns getting activated and taking over and driving the bus every time there's a conflict or a confrontation. I know that my ability to stay in a discussion, my ability to negotiate rather than shut down, my ability to tolerate other people being angry has dramatically increased the more I've used that tool. And I hope you can see that that would be a tremendous benefit to somebody who is an adult. I'm a father. I'm a psychologist. I'm, you know, a coach of roller hockey for my sons, and all these different roles that I found myself in over the years, where when conflict or confrontation would come up, I would shut down or acquiesce, give in, maybe not hold my boundaries as well as I wouldn't have wanted to. And with the use of that tool, actively applying it and then doing reality management worksheets, I can honestly say it's very different today than it was 15 or 16 years ago. The way I respond when people are triggered to upset. And it gives me more flexibility, it gives me better results, and I would go so far as to say as everyone around me has benefited from my use of that tool. So there's another thing we can talk about. 563-999-3581. Give us a call and press 1, or type your question or comment in the chat room and we'll discuss it. You know, give us some grist for the mill. What would you like us to talk about or discuss or explain? I think I was hitting it pretty strongly yesterday, the idea of making sure that we do not put people on a pedestal, making sure that we tap into all of the various ways that we can actively observe day in and day out, that in most ways, people are the same. Everybody is just a person. Everybody's got strengths and weaknesses. Everybody has the same kinds of struggles. Everybody's got access to the same patterns of emotions and ranges of emotion. And the trap that comes from buying the fantasy that our culture teaches about how certain people are so much better. I have to celebrate people like Simone Biles for being one who spoke out against abuse and being one who is now opting for her own personal mental health above what, you know, the coaches or fans might want her to do. And whether she's got access to really good tools or not. She has some access to some pretty solid internal strength to be able to go against our culture and our, you know, win at all costs kind of culture. I often wish there was a way to amplify the outreach to the tools that Michael and Jeannie make available absolutely free to get more people exposed to this, because I've seen such tremendous positive benefit in my life, and I have every reason to believe that those kinds of results are available to people, you know, day in and day out, you know, without need for a doctorate in clinical psychology and just actual application of the tools, willingness to see what's there to be seen, willingness to understand more deeply how does the mind-body-energy system work, willingness to keep evaluating every time I have a negative emotion, how am I focused on things that I don't have any control over here? That's been a big theme in sessions the past few days, and especially for two sessions already this morning. How do I change my situation and my negative emotion when my mind keeps telling me I'm only feeling this way because so-and-so is doing such-and-such? Well, the answer is I will never change my emotional state for the better if I believe I'm only feeling this way because so-and-so is doing such-and-such. Whether it is, you know, a 37-year-old offspring living with a 60-some-year-old parent who is not being responsible and not making moves to live independently and basically taking advantage of the parents' goodwill and finances, or whether it's a partner in a marriage who is feeling that the pattern that's developed between him or her and their spouse is abusive. In either case, if I focus on my partner, if I focus on my offspring, if I focus on my parent, there is no way I can move to a better emotional state or a productive resolution of that situation. Yes, but she, and the yes, but syndrome is pretty powerful in the beginning. Yeah, but didn't you hear what I said? Didn't you hear what I just told you that she did and what he's done? And I understand that. And I understand that's not what's creating your negative emotions or my negative emotions in that situation. And until I can wake up to that actuality, until I can fully embrace and explore, observe and explore the dynamic of what creates emotions in me, I will remain a prisoner of the what if, yes buts. And if you're looking for liberation, Michael and Jeannie have the answer. It's in the tools, in the application of the tools, the reality management worksheet, the targeted journaling that Michael calls the mind shifter tool, the three early memories of conflict. I like to add the EFT tapping and some other energy work, but it's all focused on the same thing. It's all built on the realization that I only, always, and forever experience emotions that are created inside my mind-body-energy system. And the mechanism for that is whatever the interpretation is that I create and apply to my life situation or to these other people's behaviors, that is what is resonating the upset that's in me. That is what is either creating the negative emotions I'm experiencing in this moment or resonating negative emotions that I've downloaded into my energy system years ago. And the only way out is through. The only way for me to move forward is to recognize that I'm creating what I experience. So if I don't like what I'm experiencing, I need to be able to stay focused on what is that process within me? How am I doing it? And what might I step into to engage my own tools differently? You know, can I stop doing the same thing over and over again that continually leads to results I don't want? There's the first step. Can I figure out how whatever it is I'm doing that I seem to have such powerfully good reasons for doing it, how can I figure out the angle from which I can view that to say, oh, Tim, you're doing the same thing over and over again. No wonder it's not working. It didn't work the first 117 times you did it, so it's not going to work the next 27 times you do it. Once I do that, and especially if I've got access to powerful tools, the application of those tools has the potential to open the door for my liberty. And, you know, the more you talk to people, the more stuck they are, the more they want freedom, the more they want liberty, the more they want relief. So the hope is, and the goal with this work is, that we don't have to wait until people are hitting rock bottom, so they're feeling completely overwhelmed and desperate and or suicidal, that we can encourage people by sharing our process, like I did yesterday with the worksheet process. Here's a regular kind of an occurrence that happens. I'm on the weekend, I'm in a safe environment, and all of a sudden I read an email, and the interpretation that I generate related to that email resonates rage in me. Well, I mean, most people that are hearing this can identify with getting a letter from somebody or getting an email or listening to a voicemail from somebody and having a rage response as a result, or a fear response, or a hurt response, or a confusion response. And as long as I believe that my rage, my hurt, my fear, my confusion is created by that voicemail or that email or that letter, I remain a prisoner. I remain a victim. But as soon as I realize every emotion I experience is an internal creation, and I train myself to interrupt the pattern of searching the outside environment for what I need to run away from or what I need to attack or what I need to bribe or seduce to get it to change, the sooner I look inside and keep my focus there and apply actual tools that help me explore the process I'm using to create that negative emotion, the sooner relief is on its way. The sooner I stop the process that's actually creating the painful, fearful, sad, hurt response and open myself to an entirely different experience of myself and of the flow of creative force moving through me. And that's the goal. Wake up to the awareness, the conscious, active awareness of your true nature as part of this flow of creation. So, that's what we're here to support and promote. And the tools for doing that are available at yagain.org. And there's a support group tonight from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central. And we have time for a comment. We've got another 14 minutes left. 563-999-3581. What's on your mind? What would serve you to discuss or explore for the next 12 or 13 minutes? I found that passage from the book that I was referring to earlier, Better Off in Nigeria, And the book is called Mad in America. So there was a gentleman named Mosher who ran an experiment, and he was part of the, I think it was National Institute of Health. And and basically his experiment was, let's see how much better people get or how much worse they get if we put them in a loving environment, nurturing, supportive environment without meds, than if we just give them meds. And he called the project Soteria, S-O-T-E-R-I-A. And it was highly successful, and then he got a tax for it because, you know, it's going against Big Pharma and the American Psychiatric Association. And eventually it got shut down, and they attacked his career and all that good stuff that would normally happen. So then there's a segment of the book after he talks about all that where he says, Better Off in Nigeria is the title of this. And here's a segment that I highlighted. Mosher's experiment and the court battles had occurred at a very particular time in American history. The civil rights movement, protests against the Vietnam War, and Watergate all made the 1970s a time when disenfranchised groups had a much greater opportunity than usual to be heard. Ken Kesey's book, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, suggested that even crazy people should be listened to. That was the societal context that made it possible for the clash between the two realities. One reality experienced by patients and the one we as a society believed in. And it made it possible for these two to clash momentarily and become a matter of public debate. With the demise of the Soteria Project, the debate officially ended. In the 1970s passed into the 1980s, and lingering protests by patients over their drugs were dismissed. And they were dismissed as simply the rantings of crazy people. As Edward Shorter declared in his 1997 book, A History of Psychiatry, antipsychotic medications had initiated a revolution in psychiatry and made it impossible for patients with the diagnosis of schizophrenia to lead relatively normal lives without being confined in institutions. That became the agreed-upon history, and not even repeated findings by the World Health Organization that said schizophrenics in the developed countries fared much worse than schizophrenics in poor countries, disturbed that view. But the truth is, when the World Health Organization launched a study to compare outcomes in different countries, the results were mind-boggling. At both 2- and 5-year follow-ups, patients in 3 poor countries, India, Nigeria, and Colombia, were doing dramatically better than the patients in the United States and 4 other developed countries. So, the World Health Organization did its own study, and basically the result of the study was loving, respectful, nurturing, supportive care is highly preferable for outcomes, not just the experience of the patients, but the actual outcomes long term, preferable to the drugging regimen that so many people are subjected to. So, hopefully there will be even more to say about that after I've interviewed Robert Whitaker later this afternoon, and I'll look forward to the opportunity to share those insights here. as I look forward to 5 days a week sharing access to the tools that can help you move toward healing. And those are available at whyagain.org. So what's on your mind? What have we stirred up with our comments and our little readings today and our recommendation to use the tool, the Three Early Memories of Conflict? 563-999-3581. Give us a call and press 1 and contribute to making this next 6 or 7 minutes useful to you. How can we be of service? What is on your mind? What is on your mind? On Your Mind, by the way, is the name of the podcast hosted by Journey's Dream. Coincidentally? Probably. Coincidentally, I ask on a regular basis, what's on your mind here on Mind Shifters Radio? 563-999-3581. I'm also in the process of reading and looking for an interview with a gentleman who's a psychologist, and he's writing the story, The Struggle to Be, a psychologist's view from both sides of the locked door. And hopefully, as we interview people who have been through those struggles and people who have had help from the holistic and the integrative and the functional medicine approach, we'll have even more resources to suggest for people, whether they're struggling with mental health issues or they have a family member or a friend who's struggling with mental health issues. And, you know, my hope is to simply keep adding resources to the ones that Michael and Jeannie are already making available at whyagain.org. And resources not just for the what do I do with my anger or my fear or my sadness, but resources for even the more intrusive types of spiritual adventures or crises or mental health episodes that people have. Because the fact of the matter is, there's nothing that you'll find in the worst of the worst psychiatric hospitals or facilities that doesn't have its roots in what every one of us experience and struggle with every day. The thing that separates us from others is, are we more flexible? Are we too flexible? Are we more rigid? Are we too rigid? But the same basic dynamics, the same hopes and fears, the same desires for belonging and connection, the same challenges in relationship and the challenges in perception that keep us in the conflicts we're in, because we are unaware of how active our perceptual process is. We're unaware of the fact that the pictures that show up in our minds are not an accurate representation of the outer world. They are the, you know, 80 or 90% formed by our past experiences and our biases and our prejudices and our woundedness. And we're not aware of that. We think we open our eyes and we look out and we see the world just as it is. You know, this is why I have so many couples that come into therapy and he says, she is so abusive. And as soon as he's done talking, she opens her mouth and she says, he is so abusive. And I didn't do any of the stuff that he just told you I did. And then the partner opens his or her mouth and says, wait a minute, she's lying to you. I never did all those things she just said I did. Well, how could this happen? These are people who function at jobs outside the home. These are competent adult individuals. They drive cars. They shower their bodies daily. They help raise children. They function at jobs. And if you listened to them without the understanding of how active our process of perception is, you would think that either one of these or both of these people are hallucinating. They're psychotic. Because he's hearing her say and do things that she swears she never said and did. And she is hearing him seeing and hearing him say and do things that he swears he never did. Well, how could that be? Either they are each creating a very different picture in their minds through this very active process we call perception, or one or both of them are psychotic, and they can't tell the difference between the fantasy thoughts in their head and the events in the outside world. And my vast experience in therapy for 47 years leads me to the very solid conclusion that it is not that they are psychotic. It is that each of them is participating very actively in the process of perception, and they don't know that. We are not taught in our schools and in our families, even in our schools of higher education. We are not taught how active the process of perception is and how we are literally creating our experience of life moment to moment. We are literally creating the images that show up in our minds and that seem so clearly to be an accurate representation of the outside world. And we are not taught, the way the Course in Miracles would teach us, of the distorting power of the way we want things to be. And we are not taught about how, if I'm carrying a trauma from the past and it gets resonated into activity, it becomes a part of the filter, a part of the core construct that shows up in my mind as my perception of the world in this moment. So whether you like Michael and Jeannie's tools or you find some other tools, please find tools that help you observe and then work with these actualities of life. You are constructing your experience of life moment to moment. So we've reached near the end of our hour. I see Jeannie on the switchboard, but she hasn't turned her microphone on yet. So I will remind us one more time that we have a support group tonight from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central. And I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I'll say welcome, Jeannie Wright.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I appreciate you. And welcome to the middle of the week, or I guess we're past the middle of the week now.
Yeah, it's a Thursday. So have a great show.
Thank you. Bye. Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Thursday, July the 29th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And what Dr. Tim was talking about, have you ever done the same thing? Have you ever created an event or an experience based solely on what's going on in your own mind? Whether it's, past that you've had, let's say, a bad experience with a partner. And so anytime your current partner does something that triggers an emotion, maybe they look at you a certain way, and it's like, oh, every time I got looked at that way before, it meant a big argument was coming or that they were going to hit me or something. And so you actually create in the present person's going to do or say or what they're thinking, and it may be the furthest thing from the truth, from actuality. You have a reality going on that's only between your ears, and then there is the actuality, what's really going on outside. And so we'll give Michael just a few moments to get dialed in, and I'll open the floor. Is there anything that someone would like to share? Have you ever been there? Have you ever done that? Or based on what you thought you heard? I'll give you an example. This was back, it's been multiple years ago. And we were getting ready to travel. We were at Heartland. We had just gotten a new Sprinter, and we were loading it. And I asked Michael where he wanted something put in the van. And what he said was, put it wherever you think because it's more important to you than me. And what I heard, what he was saying was that where things were organized and put up was more important to me because I'm very organized, very OCD. But what I heard was that the van was more important to me than he was to me. And so it was just a shift in my mind of where the emphasis was on the words. And I was so angry that he would even think that the van would be more important than he was. And it took, I don't remember, it was like a day or two before it actually sunk in what he said. And it was like, oh, my gosh, I created all this drama and trauma based on what I heard, what I thought I heard. And it was just twisted on some past experience I had had with someone else. And I overlaid the current event with my own thought and created my own upset. I mean, everything that was going on in actuality was totally different than what was going on in my reality. And when I finally saw that, it was like, oh, my gosh, how could I have even thought that he said that? But so it can be little things. And we twist it based on what we think is really going on. And it's only what's really going on in our head. And so forgiveness is, how do we change those things that are going on in our head? How do we let go of the fears and the stresses and the griefs and the pains and the anger and all of those things which we create on our own? And that's what this work is about, is how to go inside and how to change what's going on inside. I often use the example of the story in the scriptures where it says that there was this big storm going on and the disciples were in a boat and they saw Yeshua, Jesus, walking on water. And Peter's like, oh, if you tell me to step out and come to you, I know I can walk on water. And so Jesus is like, okay, come on. And as long as he's paying attention to where he's going and what he's doing, he steps out and he walks on water. Now, there has been nothing changed in the storm. The wind is still blowing. The waves are still rocking. Everything that created so-called, quote-unquote, their fear, that all is still happening. He's now walking on water, and that has, the circumstance has nothing to do with his ability. But then he starts looking at the circumstance, and he sinks. We all have storms going on in our life. They may be little small things. They may be what we would consider big things. And they're just storms. And it's up to us whether we walk on water or whether we sink. So we can walk above the storm. It can still go on and still be doing its thing, and we can be at peace and walk on top of it. Or we can look at the circumstance, and we can fall back into it, and we can sink. So what storm is going on in your life? And are you sinking, or are you walking on water? Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. Very well said. Right on track. And, you know, there's a powerful song out there that speaks about a dynamic as you walk through a storm. Hold your head up high and don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of the storm, there's a golden light. And when we realize that we can be in the light and function as the light, or we can be on the darkness and function as the darkness, and, you know, it all goes back to a basic principle that Yeshua put forward about the fact that we are creators. And he says, let thine eye be single, and thy body will be filled with light. If you talk to a modern-day physicist, they'll tell you that what we call matter is light energy solidified. So here's this physicist, 2,000 years ago, Yeshua, who says, if your focus is on one piece of mind energy, either fear or connecting this to love, then your creative process must follow suit. And we tie that in with something we talked about yesterday, the opening words in the book of John that were told by the Greeks, that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. And in Aramaic, it doesn't say that at all. It says in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. So we now have exact instructions on how the creative process works. Focus your mind on one piece of mind energy, fear or love, and you get to play out that dynamic in your creative process. I was thinking about our conversation yesterday, and I don't know if Cecilia's there today, but that was powerful, Cecilia. And another piece of the puzzle to look at to tie in here is to look at the power person dynamic. And I know with you're doing the self-study intensive, you're going to be coming across that. That's going to be coming up as you go through that material. But just to give a highlight to it, how does the power person dynamic work? And my offering is, this is absolutely what runs the world. I don't care how highfalutin, you know, somebody with a dozen different degrees has their name in lights. This is what runs the world. And it is the power person dynamic. And I don't care whether you're in church or you're in the corporation or you're in the government or you're in the family or you're in the neighborhood or the club, whatever it is. Here's the bottom line. Three things happen, usually to a child, though it doesn't need to be a child. I've seen it happen with adults. And those three things are that there's someone who has more power over another person's life than that individual does. Again, usually a child. So maybe it's a child of three. And usually, again, though not always, it's a parent. So if a parent has more power over the child of three's life, that's one strike for creating a power person dynamic. The second one is, if that person who has the power is not functioning as a human being, that is, they are not functioning as and out of love. And then the third leg of that stool is that if the individual who's the object of that power perceives the situation as a survival situation, they move into a receptivity mode for this power person dynamic. Literally, their energy field, and in the context of our conversation yesterday, their whole nervous system is wide open. And very much like a sponge, they will suck in all the energy in the environment. And the energy, you know, a power person who's raging, screaming, you know, wildly crazy, exuding a tremendous force, tremendous energy force, that if the child has an open field and is just drawing that energy in, at any time in the future that circumstances are presented that are similar to that circumstance with the power person, that energy that's been absorbed will open and will simply puke out of one's mouth. And the power person dynamic is the root of all disease. Literally, I'm talking about physiological diseases, mental diseases, emotional diseases, financial diseases, relationship diseases. This is the root of all disease. And unconsciously, we will be drawn to engage that energy and engage others who are in resonance with that energy. In other words, we'll tend to be drawn into relationships with people who have matching bags of garbage. And my offering is, the reason we're drawn to that is because unconsciously we know that that energy has, and that energy dynamic needs to be opened in order to be healed. And when we find someone who can resonate that dynamic in us, unfortunately, because most people don't have tools, their lives will simply go blotto unconscious in that energy. Because when a power person dynamic has been installed in the mind, in the future, relative to whatever the issue is that went on with the power person, there will only ever be three possible behaviors for the individual who was the subject of that power person dynamic, the child in this case. The level of stress that an individual is under will determine which one of three possible behaviors the mind, the automatic decision system in that individual, will select. Now, I very carefully don't say the word choose because there's no choice involved. It's pure resonance. Whatever's firing at the highest level, and remember, resonance is a dynamic of energy exchange. You know, think about, you know, remember you were in physics class in high school, and the teacher stood up there and hit a middle C tuning fork on the table and put it near a second tuning fork, and that second tuning fork started to vibrate. Why? Because there's a matching atomic magnetic structure between the two tuning forks. Now, if I had a middle C tuning fork in my hand and somebody came along with a middle A tuning fork and stuck it on the desk, nothing would happen to my middle C tuning fork because there is no atomic magnetic resonance. There's no match of energy between them. But the person who hits the middle C tuning fork on the desk and puts it close to the second tuning fork will find that the second tuning fork starts to vibrate. If I hold a deeply traumatic, high energy experience in my field, literally, because everything I hold is energy, and energy by definition is motion, and motion creates energy waves. Now, I'll never forget, this goes back 40 years ago, I used to keynote at a conference called Global Science. And one year, a gentleman named Marcel Vogel came to the conference. Marcel was a 23-year, at that time, was a 23-year senior scientist with IBM. He was the only non-degree, Marcel didn't have a degree. He was the only non-degree scientist that IBM had on their staff. Why didn't Marcel have a degree? Because nobody could teach him anything. He was a genius from the start. At the age of 11, Marcel invented and patented chemical light. Just a kid of 11. You know, if you go to a football game and you buy a light stick and there's a glass tube inside of it and it's plastic, wrapped in plastic, you bend it and the glass tube breaks and the chemicals mix and it turns to light. That was Marcel's invention at the age of 11. Now, his family didn't have money. So this 11-year-old child patented his invention. That's the kind of mind Marcel had. If you have a computer, stop and say a prayer. You know, Marcel's left his body now. And send him a thank you. Because he's the man who invented the magnetic coding for IBM that allows your hard drive to store information. If it weren't for Marcel, we wouldn't have hard drives like we have today. So Marcel came to the Global Science Conference. And he presented a thing called a Delaware camera. Now, the Delaware camera is a camera that works differently than your average light-based camera. You know, when you click the shutter on your camera, the aperture opens, it lets a certain amount of light in. That light registers on the photographic plate, you develop it, and you get a picture. But that's not how the Delaware camera works. Between the light source and the photographic plate in the Delaware camera, there's a tuning mechanism, much like a radio tuner. So you can attune it to different frequencies. Here's the point of the story. Here's what Marcel brought to the conference. He showed us the pictures of the high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. He could take a picture, literally, of those high-energy waves. So the person who's gone through this traumatic experience, their field has been open. Their nervous system is just raw and open and just like a sponge, drawing in everything that's in the environment. That's all energy. And that energy is in continuous motion. If it stopped, it wouldn't be energy, and the whole balance of the universe would be destroyed. So someone walking around with that unconscious, energetic experience of trauma is silently, energetically communicating 24/7, 365. I call it the creative wave or the psychic megaphone. And so the person who went through that, let's say, that raging parent experience at the age of 3 is now 60. And they're walking down the street, you know, they're a successful business person and things are rocking in their lives, except that there's this nagging something. And no matter what, they're really not very happy. They do all kinds of crazy things, you know, a fifth of scotch every night, whatever, in order to be happy. They're drug addicts, whatever. He's walking down the street, and again, some raging person approaches him and assaults him. And he says, how do I get a copy of Michael Rice's book? Why is this happening to me again? How do I understand? I didn't say anything. I just had a nice dinner, and everything was quiet. I was just walking down the street. Why is this happening to me again? Here's why. The unresolved, emotionally traumatized energy is continuously radiating a resonating energy field that, like the middle C tuning fork, is going to cause a resonance in anybody else with the same frequency. And that person is going to be drawn into expression with him. Until he opens his field, until he accesses fully every bit of trauma energy from that 3-year-old experience, he's going to tend to draw that kind of trauma to his life. And when he does resolve that 3-year-old experience, when he does open his nervous system, when he does move out of that sympathetic dominant state into the parasympathetic state, he's in a thrive place, and he opens and he's able to embrace that horrific experience that happened, then now that he's stepped in and started doing his work, he's going to probably start to move to the next level and become a true good ancestor. Remember I talked about Marcel Vogel, or pardon me, not Marcel in this case, Jonas Salk. He said the most important thing you can do is to be a good ancestor. And so what's this guy going to do if he really digs in and starts to do his work? He's going to start to access the genetic memory of the father who was the rager that impaled his energy field with this trauma energy. And he's going to open that, and he's going to go to the next level, and the next level, and the next level, remembering that, you know, his father being his power person, his father had a power person who had a power person who had a power person, and he's going to start to move through the generations of his bloodline and clean up his life and clean up the generational patterns. Remember that story about the Jews wandering in the desert? What did they say had to happen to get out of the desert? Now, was this a hot, sandy place? Was this an actual physical desert they were talking about? Well, if you check out the desert that they ostensibly got lost in, it's about 35 square miles. And obviously, these people are pretty bright, and they know a whole lot about astronomy. And if they were lost in the desert, they know the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. And what would they do if they wanted to get out of the desert? They'd wake up one morning, they'd pack their belongings, and they'd start walking west. 35 square miles, you can't be too far from the border. They're going to be out of the desert. It can't take 40 years. I mean, that's just silly. But that idea, that metaphor of the desert, is a code word for the unconscious. Now, that guy of 60 that I told you about has been through rage experience after rage experience. Remember, he met that wonderful woman. She was so beautiful and so sweet. And for the until the honeymoon was over, they had this wonderful time. And then in rage and drunken stupors, he would hit and strike and abuse and beat and not have any idea. And after he sobered up, he'd go, oh, my God, what have I done? I'm so sorry. I will never do that again. So the next time he gets drunk, and that trauma energy is resonated, and he has to select one of three behaviors. And the level of behavior, or the behavior that his mind will select, will be related to the level of stress he's under. So with this beautiful, wonderful woman that he says he cherishes so deeply, when there's no stress, he is Mr. Nice Guy. He is just a gentleman, charming, cherishing. Everything is awesome. But then when stress starts to build, he stops doing that charming stuff, which is the way that he got along with his power person. No stress. The automatic decision system causes the mind to do whatever it is we did to get along with our power person. But then when stress starts to build, a new behavior will appear that perhaps this woman he's in relationship with has never seen. And this new behavior will be that of what he did to resist and survive with his power person. So maybe what he did to resist and survive with his power person is he became very snarky and nasty. So all of a sudden, Mr. Nice Guy becomes Mr. Nasty, and they say the honeymoon is over. Boy, we've got work to do in this marriage. And then the third level of stress, that is, he is ultra-stressed. His automatic decision system will force him into the root of that experience in his nervous system. And all the rage that poured out of his power person's mouth will pour out of his mouth. And along with it, the fist that his father's used to beat his head in will find him beating his wife. And that's as sure a pattern as night follows day. Now, I can remember Jeannie and I were in South Florida. This probably goes back, I don't know, 14, 15 years ago, sweetie, if you remember. We were doing a conference for a gentleman who had an online AA program that he had run for years. He'd been sober for about 30 years. He was probably in his 60s at this point. And I explained this dynamic of the power person. He came up to me after workshop, Michael, I know that that isn't true because my father, when I was a kid, my father beat me mercilessly, and certainly I hated it, and I never, ever hit my son. And he was kind of in a defiant sort of posture of, you know, so that's just not true. I said, well, let me ask. I acknowledge you for having enough control of yourself to never hit your son. But tell me, still today, how much time do you spend having to control your fist? I could have knocked him over with a feather. He said, that's my constant struggle to keep from hitting people. Yeah. That's your power person dynamic. Now, maybe you were able to resist doing that with your son. Congratulations, your son is blessed. Although, go talk to your son and find out that some of the same dynamics are in him that are in you that are unresolved in regard to your power person. Because if you are your son's power person, those dynamics are still there being beaten and raged at, even though you never raised a finger, because he got to be in the energy field of that unresolved rage and pain. And it has passed from generation to generation, and he received it in his genes just like you received it in your genes from your father. And now if you go to work, you will truly become a good ancestor, and you'll start cleaning out your genes. You'll start cleaning out the dynamics. You'll start facing every terror, every trauma, every fear, every beating, every rage, every sadness, every grief, every criticism, every put down. Instead of responding with the power person's hostility or fear, you'll stop. You'll take a breath. And when you do, you'll apply forgiveness and you'll start to remove those dynamics that are deeply embedded in your unconscious, in your nervous system. And then you will be led to tools. You'll be taught, and you'll learn, and your intuition will teach you. And the final step will happen in your healing when that power that is within you, that is the only and true master teacher, will guide you on how to heal those final energetic dynamics that have been going on perhaps for 1,000 generations in your bloodline. We're here to be part of delivering those tools, to make them available. And of course, by delivering them, we get to learn them. I love what Richard Bach says. We teach best that which we most need to learn. So as you listen, you hear what it is that we need to learn, because we're on the path for learning it. And we're doing our best to incorporate it, embody it, practice it, and make it available and make the support available to others. So that together we can change the unconscious dynamics of 1,000 generations of our bloodline. You look back through the history of humanity, and this touches every one of us. The rages, the pains, the traumas, the insanities. You know, in the last 75 years, we've murdered in this world 175 million people in war. And you'll notice the unconscious dynamics are starting to come out now within our own country, with our own countrymen, as that unconscious rage and that unconscious pain is brought forward. We will keep manifesting that until a critical mass of people say, ah, I got it. I don't have to live in the desert anymore. My 40 years are up. Oh, here's that rage of my mother. Here's that pain of my father. Here's that trauma of my big sister who was my power person. And now I'm going to step in, and as the Native Americans were wont to say, I'll say to myself, Matakwiasin, which in the Native American culture was a sort of a prayer statement that was offered when people went into a sweat lodge or a healing ceremony of any kind. Matakwiasin meant for all my relations. We are stepping in to do this work for all of our relations, to put an end to this insanity of hostility and fear, and open the space for our nervous systems, and this is called the parasympathetic dominant state, to actually have a space to bring in the true state of being that we are as love, to bring that new, you know, you've heard me ask the question so many times, have you ever held a newborn? Go back and tap into the energy of the newborn. And notice when you tap into the energy of the newborn and you recognize them as love, that the newborn is not loving you, but the newborn is love. The parasympathetic state is a state where the nervous system is open and receptive to thrive and to receive light directly, to receive the active presence of love fully within it and incarnate it within every cell and flush out of every cell the hostilities and fears of the generations. It's not an easy piece of work to do. You know, when you look at how long this insanity has been going on in the earth, for people to come out of the darkness, come out of the hostility and fear-based mind. You know, imagine walking up to someone who's in the middle of a huge, raging political argument over what's going on, you know, without getting into details, what's going on in the culture today, and they're raging over it. Imagine walking up to those two people and offering to each one of them, how would you like to take a breath and tap into the presence of love? What would you heal? How many times have you played this argument out with how many people? Yeah, you think it's about politics. It's got nothing to do with politics. It's your own unconscious dynamics. Yeah, you think it's about your relationship with your wife or your husband. It's not about your relationship with your husband. It's about your own unconscious dynamics. Yeah, you think it's about that guy who ripped you off for all that money and that's why you're enraged. No, because of your own unconscious dynamics. We're here to change the conversation and to support each person shifting it out of the nervous system that blocks anything to do with thriving and keeps people in survival, and opening up that nervous system to be receptive to incarnating conscious, active, present love. And when that happens, a whole different creative process operates. And according to Yeshua, the originator of these principles, the physicist, physiologist, psychologist, geneticist, who understood this and taught it in Aramaic 2,000 years ago, he said, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. He was talking about critical mass in physics when he said that. He wasn't talking about bread. He was saying, it's only going to take a small number of people who choose to literally bring heaven to earth, bring the active presence of love. Remember in Aramaic, the kingdom of heaven, as the Greeks translated it, in Aramaic means the community of love. It's only going to take a small number of people who choose to enter the community of love. And not everybody's everybody's interested in doing that. You hear about it until you tell them the work that needs to be done. Oh, wait a minute. I need to open my unconscious and deal with all the gunk and the garbage and the rage and the hatred and the vengeance and the suffering and the loss and the death and the trauma of all my generation. You want me to? You're crazy. Oh, yeah, I want to do it. But you think I'm going to actually open and start to look at that crap? No, it takes a special breed. It takes a special breed that has the brain cells to say, okay, Matakwiasan, I'm going to do the work for all my relations, and I'm going to stick around the teaching long enough. I'm going to engage it deeply enough to actually allow my nervous system to open its deepest trauma and pain, be it mine or an ancestral pain. I'm going to bring it forward in the presence of active love and allow it to be dissolved. I can think back to a time about 30 years ago. I was 20 or so years into doing this work and had seen some magnificent healing take place. And I'm pondering and I'm asking myself the question, why? Gee, there were 30 people in the room. Why did this one heal and that one didn't? Why did this person who had this horrible traumatic disease that had gone on all their lives, all of a sudden that day it ended? And the 29 other people in the room went on with their diseases. One person had prepared and done the work. Remember the story of the woman who had the issue of blood? There's a throng of people around Yeshua. And she knows. She's prepared. She's been doing her work. She's been building the brain cells. She's at the place where she knows she needs some very powerful support. And if she can do it, that last piece of work that she doesn't have the vitality to do on her own, she can get the support by touching the hem of his garment. And we're not talking about her touching a piece of cloth. We're talking about her stepping into his energy field and being empowered by the presence of his active love. And literally, she ends a 12-year severe disease process, physical disease process, ends that instant. Now, we're told in that particular story there was a whole throng around Yeshua. I don't know how many people are in a throng. Are there 2 or 10 or 2,000? I don't know. Maybe it was the 5,000. Whoever it was, one out of all of them healed. One was ready to do the piece of work that was required to get rid of a severe physical disease. There's a poem we use. It goes like this. Tell me the weight of a snowflake, a hawk asked a wild dove. Nothing, more than nothing, was the answer. The hawk then said, I must tell you a marvelous story. I sat on the branch of a fir, and it began to snow. Not heavily, not a raging blizzard, just like in a dream without any violence. As I sat on the branch, I counted the snowflakes falling on the twigs of my branch. Their number was exactly 3,741,942 when the next snowflake, nothing more than nothing, as you say, fell on the branch. And as that snowflake fell on the branch broke off. The hawk flew away. The dove, an expert on peace, thought about the story for a while and finally said to himself, perhaps only one person's voice is lacking for peace to come about in the world. Will you be that critical mass person, the leavening that leavens the whole loaf? I don't know. You might be. Are you ready to step in and do the work that it takes? It's not a pleasant work. Its rewards are absolutely awesome. But it can be tough. It can be painful. And to do it, you have to remember to breathe. It's a key part of the process. So this experience 30 years ago, and I asked, what is it? What causes one person to heal and another one doesn't? And what became clear to me, the answer that I got, was that two things have to occur for healing to happen. One, the energy that has been hidden in the unconscious, in the nervous system to date, is going to have to come to the surface and make an appearance. That means it might be pretty nasty. Two, present in that space must be conscious, active, present love. If love is conscious, active, and present, talk about that story of the woman with the issue of blood. Yeshua is the presence of conscious love. She knows she just needs to get close enough to that presence of love, and that will vitalize her sufficiently that she can let go of this power person dynamic that's been residing in her womb and creating such trauma for 12 years. Am I willing to do the work? Am I willing to do the preparation? You know, again, how many are in a throng? Was it maybe the 5,000? So one person out of 5,000 healed in that, in the power of his presence. One person, their field was open enough that they were ready to embrace whatever was in their hearts, their unconscious that needed to be cleaned out. Takes prepping oneself and doing the work. It takes building the brain cells to recognize what is happening when the healing process opens and moves. It requires breathing. Jeannie oftentimes says, oh, Michael, I can hear you breathing through your microphone. Yep, well, that's what I'm here to do, is breathe. So I breathe with you, and I invite you to become willing to open your nervous system and find whatever's there. Touch whatever's there. Soften into whatever's there, and free yourself. If there's pain somewhere in your structure, that place where there's pain is where the energy of trauma is stored or where the energy blockage is that would otherwise allow that thriving, awesome energy to move through. So you want to focus. You know, basically your body is your hard drive. It stores everything from every generation. Literally, the storage capacity of one single human form is beyond even the greatest massing of Cray computers. You could put all the Cray computers in the world, the big giant supercomputers together. You wouldn't have the ability to store the information that one human form has. And unfortunately, some of what's been stored is pretty traumatic and never belongs in the structure. And so it's the healing of those dynamics that this work is about. And the chapter that we're on in the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, is a chapter on healing abuse and victimhood. So let's turn to it. If you are, if you've been following along, you want to read with us, we're on the top of page 93 in the chapter on healing abuse and victimhood. We've been talking to Richard about the fact that there are no victims. If you want to, quote unquote, become the victim of a perpetrator of crime, just carry the energy of trauma of that crime, and guess who's going to show up in your life? The person who's in residence. You don't have to send an engraved invitation. The invitation's been sent by the simple fact that you hold that issue. So the way we volunteer for victimhood and trauma, loss, deprivation, disease, suffering, financial discord, relational issues, is we hold an energy unresolved. So I'm offering in response to Richard realizing how he'd played on his victimhood, I offer the thought, again, we're at the top of page 94, I believe love is the most powerful force on earth. It seems one of the benefits of giving up anger, sadness, blame, and guilt, and letting go of my ball and chain is regaining my power. Is that it? Does this mean the choices I make are the key? Richard asks. Is that it? Is that the key? That was actually, I misread that. That was a statement that Richard made, and my answer to him is, that's right. And the new choices you've been making today are grounding you in your power, I offered. He comes back and says, then you're saying that the power I lost playing the victim becomes available to me to consciously recreate my life? He says, to think about every part of me being aligned with and creating out of love, it's pretty exciting stuff. And I offer him the thought, yes, and it takes work. It is not an event that happens in a single moment, but a process that results from being responsible for what you set up in your life. Notice, Richard, that the truth is safe and healing. Now that you're aware of behavior patterns that don't serve you, you are in a position to change them. That's empowerment. And we are here to help every human being on the planet to uncover the empowerment that lies within them. Empowerment doesn't come from outside of you. It's yours. It's always been yours. If it's been covered up, and for most people, you know, generations and generations, it's been covered up. The use of the tools uncovers that empowerment. It is yours. It is always your power. But when we deny something, when we pretend that something we're going through again is not ours, that it's somebody else's fault, we actually hide our power in our brain's image of them. When we collapse the perceptual construct that our mind generates out of hiding our power in our brain's image of them and playing the victim, when we collapse that perception, it loses the power that was ours from the beginning to come back to be available for conscious use. That's what we're here to do. I hope that makes sense. And so Miss Jeannie, I don't know where all that came from, but it did.
Awesome.
And maybe we can put this in one of the special shows. It sounds like a good introduction.
There's no hands up. We have 14 minutes. So if somebody has a question or a comment, please press 1.
Yeah, and I want to thank you for starting the comments out with what you did, because that's what triggered the whole conversation. So thank you. I so deeply appreciate you.
Oh, I appreciate you too. I was just following up on Dr. Tim's conversation in the first hour was about people creating their reality, and even some of his clients that he had had this morning that, you know, he said, she said, and she said, he said, and they each denied what the other one was saying, and they were creating their own reality and their own trauma out of their own minds and not based on actuality. So I was just kind of following up on that. So we do have a hand up now, and it is Miss Cecilia, area code 480. You're on the air.
Okay. Hi. I know I have like a little bit of time left for this huge, humongous issue of mine. So I just go for it. Everybody knows I take care of 7 dogs, okay? So anyway, yes, it is a lot. Yes, I'm responsible for cleaning their teeth. I'm responsible for making their food. I'm responsible for everything. And find time for me to work on myself. Well, you know, I've been taught not very well to clean teeth, not at all well enough to clean teeth that have been left to get to the stage they're at. And I've called and tried to find people that would, you know, be okay with cleaning their teeth without a veterinarian around, because I'm not, I've been dealing with these dogs homeopathically for as long as they're alive. And so I was taught by the homeopath, who's in a whole nother state, how to begin to learn how to clean teeth. But it's overwhelming with 7 dogs. My point is, I've created a reality. My neighbors, they tried to help me, but they just got grossed out, and they don't believe it. They only believe in the allopathic way of putting them under and pulling more teeth than necessary and yada, yada, yada. And so it's a theme in my life that I don't have anybody in my life to help me, okay, whether it be to be a friend to talk to. Probably that's why I'm on the phone with you guys all the time, okay, because I don't have anybody to talk except my daughter, but she doesn't talk. She doesn't add to the conversation. So, meaning sharing something going on in her. Anyway, so I want to know what is in my reality. I want to ask myself, am I still carrying that I wasn't connected in, that was a huge victim story, that I wasn't connected in my family at all? 0. So, why would I have changed that story? I wouldn't have. I haven't done a worksheet on it. And I keep telling this person, and if I could drive 15 hours, I can't now. Ted's not here anymore to watch the dogs. I've driven to 15 hours in Nevada, the middle of nowhere in Nevada where the homeopath lives, and she'd clean them. But I can't leave now. I can't leave, and there's, you know, it's just.
Take a breath. Notice,
okay.
You've been going for quite a while without a breath.
I told her yesterday,
Take a breath. That means go wordless for a minute and just breathe. Wordless.
Oh, I like that analogy.
Yeah. And just breathe.
Okay.
So let yourself get back to a centered place.
Okay.
I'd invite you to put your hand up, your right hand up over top of your left ear. And gently pull your head over to your right shoulder, as far down as it comfortably goes. And as you do that, allow your eyes to look up and to the left as far up as they'll go. So they're stretched way up, and allow yourself, feel your breath as you stretch your eyes, feel the, literally, feel the energy from your eyes as you take your breath, and let it expand into your chest, your abdomen, all the way down to your pelvis. And just like imagine your whole body is blowing up like a balloon with that breath, and it stretches right from your eyes. And that nervous system opens that welcomes the presence of love. And take a second breath there. Just let it stretch just a little bit more. And then let your right hand go and bring your left hand up over your right ear and stretch your head again. Back towards your left shoulder. And this time your eyes looking way up and to the right. Deep breath all the way down into your chest and your back. And just let everything expand and open. You can feel the energy from your eyes as they stretch up into the right, just reaching down and opening that flow into your structure. Just let yourself take a minute to be in that state. And when you find your voice tones going up and your speech accelerates, that'll be a signal that lets you know that you're going back into that sympathetic dominant state. That state of hopeless and helpless is starting to move and take over again. That's where carbon-based memory and the power person dynamic are stepping in to run the show. And that'll be a place to just notice, just gently, be really gentle with and take care of yourself. Allow yourself to do that stretch and that breath. Just let yourself get back to that balanced state where things in your structure are soft and open. And love flows there. And, you know, when we're in that sympathetic dominant state and carbon-based memory takes over, you know, whatever stored in physiology runs the show, there's no resolution from there. But if you'll just, each time that state comes up, each time you catch yourself there, if you just take a minute, go back to that connected state, there's a power in you. You know, Ruka Dukucha in Aramaic, a feminine elemental force that undoes the effects of yours and teaches you the truth, is there for you. That's where your empowerment lies. And that's where the answers will come. You know, and the answer may look like, gee, you know, you might just be going out for a drive this afternoon and you drive past a house that you've driven by 1,000 times and this is the first time you notice there's a little sign that says, I cherish dogs too. That person's out in the lawn, you stop and you talk to them and go, oh yeah, I used to work in a vet clinic and I know how to clean dog's teeth. Bring them on over. Well, actually, I've got a better idea. I'll go over with you and help you. I don't know where your answer lies. But that's the kind of answer that comes when you allow that power to flow in you. But when the voice goes up and carbon-based memory takes over, that frantic non-being self is trying to figure things out. And you can't figure things out. But you can breathe and take care of yourself. And even if there's nobody else around to honor and cherish you, you can honor and cherish you. And when that becomes the predominant resonant energy that emanates from your energy field, guess how many people are just going to spontaneously start to show up to honor and cherish you? Even, you know, even if they're a couple of 1,000 miles away in Bristol, Virginia or something. They're going to show up and they're going to hold a space for you, you know, or maybe they're in Hawaii and they actually write a song for you. You know, it's like They're all over the place. And I bet there are a lot of them right there in Phoenix, Arizona, too. But, you know, we can only see what we have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. And if we're listening out of our traumatized past, somebody could be standing right in front of us screaming how they want to support, and we literally won't be able to hear it. What we'll hear it as is attack.
Mm-hmm.
So remember, the first order of business is there's a power in you that you need to stay connected with, that you'll thrive when you stay connected with. And when you connect with that level, all other things will be made unto you. Everything else will tend to fall in line. And when it's not falling in line, there's your next worksheet. There's your next piece of work. Oh, I'm creating a down result here. What's the part of me that I need to forgive now? And you'll probably have to ask yourself that question many, many, many times. But if you remember to ask the question and you do that piece of work, life is just going to get so much easier.
Okay, I'm sure I'll be on the radio with the next one I have to work on.
Well, and we will say thank you again. And we're delighted that you're here to share the space with us.
You know what? I wonder.
Because that's what we're here to do with you.
I wonder if millions and zillion people feel the same way, that I don't want to bother any. I know you said yesterday, but I mean, the thought, even when I'm breathing, is I'm resistant to what you're saying. But I hear, yeah, there's a part of me that I want to clean that up with. And so a million zillion other people must be resistant to wanting to actually go through this and be on a radio show and expose the so-called dirty laundry, is what you hear from your power people. Don't you dare expose the,
yeah,
family's dirty laundry, right? Okay.
Yeah. Keep the secret.
Yeah. And don't you dare talk about the past, and don't you dare talk about this with the look of I'll kill you.
Yep.
So,
yep.
So that's it to me, obviously, that I'm talking about it, so it's there. I mean, the resistance is that power person dynamic that I have in me.
And the thing that happens, Cecilia, is that the power person's voice embedded in us speaks as though it's our voice.
Mm-hmm.
We mistake that voice for our own voice, and we believe it. And
yeah,
that's what needs to be forgiven and to be done with.
Yeah. Okay. I will be at my voice lesson during the show tomorrow. I won't be on tomorrow, or I would be. So I will see you guys on Monday.
All right. Well, you have an awesome weekend and a great
thank
voice
you
lesson.
Oh,
by
yeah
the way, did you get that link that I sent you, that YouTube video, that little kid? Have you looked at it?
Did you send it yesterday?
Oh, I texted you a link yesterday.
Oh, you texted me. I'll have to check on my phone. I haven't checked my phone today. I'm on it now, but I haven't used it before
okay
now.
Well,
I'll let you know.
You'll laugh when you hear it. All right. Well, you have
thanks
a blessed one. Have a great weekend.
Bye.
All right. Appreciate
thanks
you. Take
bye
care. Bye-bye. Hi, Miss Jeannie. Well, we're down to the last minute or so, so I'm just going to say, everybody, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world, and blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.
www.whyagain.org.